Hey, everybody. Happy New Year and welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Becky and joining me for this episode is Leah. Hi, Leah.
Hi, Becky.
And Amanda. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Becky.
We are so excited to be back and kicking off 2025 with, I feel like the first couple topics of 2025 are our petty revenge on 2024.
They are.
A little bit.
Yeah. Like we said, oh, that's dumb. We're going to fix it.
And we're just going to do what we want.
We are.
Well, that is more it also.
It is.
Like, yes, our petty pants are our favorite pants, but also we're doing what we want.
Yeah. In 2025, and we've talked about this. We talked about this in the when we started Project Backlist, that we you know, aren't going to necessarily be focusing on new releases and chasing, you know, the trends and stuff like that, that we really want to get back to what we love about romance, digging into some of these backlists that we've kind of glossed over because we've been so focused on the next new release. Yeah. And kind of go back and dig into some of those authors that we haven't talked about or dug in about. And it's so funny, as I was prepping for this tonight, I thought, we've not done like a Lexi Blake or a Shayla Black separately, like for our Wednesday episodes or even quick shots.
Yeah, outside of the read along.
Yeah, outside of the Perfect Gentleman series.
Yeah,
it's true. Yeah, because we have done Mary Carr. We just haven't done the other ones. And I mean, I love me some Lexi and some Shayla.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, we really, 2025, are just going to embrace backlists and remember why we love this genre.
We force people to read our favorites, I think.
Right? Yeah. Right? I mean...
Well, but also, I think a big part of it is, like, all of us had some issues with a lot of the newer releases. Not that there weren't good new releases in 2024, but we had a really hard time with a bunch of new releases.
I think it was the releases more than anything.
Well, yes, it was.
Yeah.
I was trying to be nice about it.
Well, though. But I don't want to say every new release because I loved all the new releases that came out of Aurora Rose Reynolds. I really loved everything that Carrie Ann Ryan did this year, or Carrie Elks did, or, you know,
well,
even...
Well, but that's the thing. Like, those tried and true authors that we know we can trust were really good, but, like, any... There were very few trending books that I enjoyed last year.
Yeah.
And I think that's fair. I think that's fair.
So we as a whole decided to say, fuck it. And we're going to do what we want.
We're going to do what we want. You can't make us do anything. So we're going to get right into this because we have lots to say.
It's a lot.
Yeah. So welcome to this special episode of Buzzing About Romance. I don't know what makes it special other than it's today and it's special. Today we're taking a journey through time as we explore the romance genres through the decades. From the sweeping historicals and dramatic romantic suspenses of the 90s to the indie-driven, trope-focused sensations of today, we're going to discuss how romance has evolved to reflect changing readers' taste and societal trends. Along the way, we'll highlight the books that define each era, the trend that took the genre by storm, and the way romance continues to break barriers, capture hearts. So grab your favorite cup of coffee, glass of wine, let's dive into these stories and shape the genre we love. Before we get started, though, I do want to draw attention to my very cute new Tumblr from my sister. It's from Bucky's. And look, you can write on it with a chalk marker that it comes with.
That is really cute.
Yesterday I wrote, I love Mike, so he wouldn't get mad that I had, like, another Tumblr.
But you didn't buy it, so it's different.
I didn't. Anyway.
If you don't purchase it yourself, you get a pass.
It's the Bucky's Valentine's Day Tumblr for this year.
Yeah. We were talking about that at my office job last week about the Bucky's that's opening in Ohio. And how excited people are.
Yeah. It's really funny.
And we're like, we'll have to day trip to Dayton to go to Bucky's.
The book warehouse is only like 5 minutes. The $1.25 book warehouse is only like 5 minutes from where the Bucky's is being built.
Weekend at Becky's and
I mean,
Bucky's.
margaritas, delivery margaritas, you
I
know.
know, it's all the good things.
It's all the
Amanda,
good
you might
times.
have to take a road trip.
Well, that would be a flying trip.
That'd be a
Yeah.
flying trip.
I'll pick you up on the way.
Okay, so let's start off. So what we're going to do is we are going to start in 1990, because that is when I started reading romance,
Me too.
and Amanda came in at the end of the right mid end.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, probably. I mean, I was reading stuff I shouldn't have been real young, so.
Yep,
Same.
same, same.
So we're going to
'Cause
start in the
you might have a
90s.
couple years on us, but Amanda and I are very close. So,
We're going to start
yes.
with the 90s, and then we're going to go decade to decade. We'll tell you some of our top reads out of each decade. So stick around. We promise this is going to be fun, and
It
not
is.
terribly nerdy.
It's gonna be nerdy.
It's going to be terribly
Whatever. I'm excited.
nerdy.
I will
Okay.
say though, when I was making my list, I did not read a lot of romances published in the 90s that did not have a Harlequin Blue cover on them. So I don't know what I read. I just read them all.
I was thinking about a series because this will play into next week's episode. It was a Harlequin special edition. It was called the Montana Mavericks. And so it was a sub series within special editions. And I believe that that started my love of cowboys and small towns. I still
I
remember
probably
those.
read them.
I remember
Yeah.
the icon of the running thoroughbred up on the corner, like
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I read those.
Yeah.
I definitely read those.
Yeah. Okay. So who wants, I will start in the 90s and then we'll just, someone else can take the aughts and then the
Okay.
10s and we'll go that way.
We'll work
Okay.
through it.
We'll go through this. The 1990s, the rise of romantic suspense and big historical romances. That is what dominated the 90s. Popular books in the 90s were Outlander, Dream Man by Linda Howard. Oh, Outlander is by Diana Gabaldon.
Gabaldon.
Yeah. And The Duke and I by Julia Quinn came out in 2000. Trends, romantic suspense. Why are words going to be hard tonight? Romantic suspense exploded in popularity with authors like Linda Howard, Susan Brockman, Sandra Brown, combining love stories with thrilling plots. The bodice ripper historical romances began transitioning into more nuanced, character-driven stories, and the emergence of category romances like Harlequin and Silhouette, with a focus on steamy yet formulaic love stories. So that is what we had in the 90s. The other thing to note about the 90s. There was a shift toward diverse representation. So we actually, the 90s is what laid the foundation for authors like Brenda Jackson, Beverly Jenkins. They were the one in the 90s, they published their first books. Publishing started to say, hey, we're not hitting all voices. Let's open the door. We also started to see some queer romances coming out, but not fully queer. I think many of the queer 90s romances got put into historicals when, or into erotica, and they shouldn't have
Oh, yeah, that's an interesting point.
been. So the 90s, on trend for us, it really opened the door to, like I said, more diverse voices being published. So, what were some books that we love that were published in the 1990s? Leah only
Well,
read
oh yeah,
Harlequins.
go
No,
ahead.
because honestly, like as I was looking through like books that I read that were from the 90s, it was like Stephen King and Michael Crichton and John Grisham. Like I was in this like thriller mystery like horror phase.
Yeah, that's fair.
So
Yeah.
yeah, I have like nothing from the 90s that is romance.
Amanda, what did you have in the 90s that are some of your favorite books?
Well, The McGregor Brides was in the late 90s, 1997, by Nora Roberts, and I picked that one. I mean, she has a ton. I could list a pile of her books for every decade, but The McGregor Brides is where you see the grandfather Daniel. Like, so this is like three stories, his three granddaughters in this one book, and he is like at the height of matchmaking in this, and I think he's the reason I love matchmaking books so much. But
I love a
basically he's
matchmaker.
Yeah, he's scheming. He's like, he's like planning to get all three of his granddaughters married by Christmas. It's three stories in one book, like an anthology. Like I just like I remember that book so fondly.
But I think those started as categories. Weren't those her first categories?
The
I don't
earlier
think they
books,
were.
the earlier
His were
books, his
they?
children.
His
So
okay.
like his kids Serena and Justin, like
So when
Her
he was the
his daughter Serena
father.
was like on the boat on the cruise ship with Justin. Like those were his kids. So this one
Okay.
is his granddaughters.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, what else do you have for the 90s?
Well, quick shout out though. Like you mentioned Linda Howard. Like I absolutely adore Linda Howard. So I could list a bunch of her books. But I also had the In Death series by J.D. Robb, which was Nora Roberts, like her other pen name. So like that was the time frame when all of those books came out. So there's like she's still writing them. She's at almost 60 books, and it's about one couple, like Eve and Rourke. It's like kind of futuristic in New York, and like I mean, 50 books in, and people are still like clamoring for them. So
I
that was
also
kind of like
think
my
that
suspense.
In Death series too, though, is one of those that straddles the line of
It does. It's not
romance.
really romance
Yeah.
because it has, because it's like an ongoing saga, which is why, like, I've read those ones because I love me a mystery book like those. But, like, I wouldn't categorize that as strictly romance.
Yeah, I mean, and like you said too, like I think I read like a lot of stuff that straddled that line.
Well, because when I was looking through stuff like Bridget Jones's Diary, like I love those books, but it's one of those ones where they're more women's fiction than romance, but they have enough romantic elements that like when it came out, it was categorized as romance, but now it wouldn't be because of the way that the books play out.
Yeah,
So,
we're gonna ignore Jenny's comments.
yeah, I was gonna say Jenny's over here trolling us. Yeah.
What did Jenny say? Because I don't have my stuff
She
up.
was
She
reading
was reading the.
American Girl and Babysitter's Club in the 90s.
Yeah.
Oh.
And Lindsay was probably learning how to read or something in the 90s.
Was Lindsay was born in the 90s, wasn't
Yeah, I
she?
think so. Yes.
Yeah.
So she was learning to walk.
Okay. I have Night Song by Beverly Jenkins. That's the 1990s. That was her first book. The Bride by Julie Garwood. I think that that is the
Yeah.
height and epitome of Highlander, Scottish, bodice rippers romance. I also feel like this was a turn from just the bodice ripper saga of historical to a more character-driven book because these are characters you remember.
Yeah.
And then Paradise by Judith McNaught. It was a one of her it was her first contemporary that she had written. He's a millionaire, not a billionaire, because it's only the 90s,
I
but
was gonna say a millionaire was big deal then.
big deal. It definitely plays into the family saga, the family business, second chance, enemies to lovers. Like, I love that book. And then Sea Swept by Nora Roberts. It's part of her Chesapeake Bay series, which was four
Yeah.
brothers, five brothers.
Yes. It's three. Well, yeah, they're all technically adopted. Well, the three brothers are adopted, and the younger one ends up being like related to the father.
Yeah,
So.
so I love those Nora Roberts books. And I'm so excited that in
Yeah.
January, one of our Sip and Discuss titles is a Nora Roberts title. I'm really excited for that.
Yeah, I think in the 90s too, like, you were saying like Linda Howard. She definitely has like romantic elements, but like I got really into Carin Robards and Kay Hooper like around that time too.
Yeah.
And I think Kay Hooper was doing like a lot of stuff with like psychic and serial killers and stuff like that. So there were like romantic elements, but like that That was like, I was very into like the romantic thriller kind of stuff then too. So,
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Like, I read a lot of like those style of books
yeah.
where they had like those elements to it, but it wasn't, it was more like, again, I read a lot of horror and like I read crazy books even then, just crazy in a different way.
You're so weird. Okay, who wants to read about the 2000s?
I can do it.
I
Okay, let me just get
okay,
back
go
up. Here we
ahead.
go. Okay.
I know I had to scroll up.
2000s, paranormal romance takes center stage. The popular books were Twilight by Stephenie Meyer in 2005. It revolutionized young adult and paranormal romance. Dark Lover by J.R. Ward, also in 2005, kicked off the Black Dagger Brotherhood series, a cornerstone of adult paranormal romance. The Bride Quartet series by Nora Roberts in 2009, which is one of my favorite series ever.
Ever.
And Becky's
Ever.
modernized the contemporary romance series with strong female friendships. Bet Me by Jennifer Crusie in 2004
That's such a good book.
exemplified quirky, witty romantic comedies. And Kelly Ripa announced Heartbreaker by Carly Phillips as a pick for her book club, Kelly's Book Club, in 2003.
So I added that last minute because I remember when Kelly Ripa picked that book. And I went out and grabbed it like right away. And I still have the edition. It's a
Oh, the
mass
Kelly
market
sticker.
that says it's actually printed on the cover, Kelly Ripa book club pick. And you know, this is kind of before Oprah started hers. Now we have Jenna Hagar Bush has her, or Bush Hagar has hers, and you've got Reese Witherspoon with hers. Kelly started hers, and it was the first time I remember seeing commercialized on television somebody reading and talking about the books that I liked
Yeah.
and the romances. Like, it was just one of those foundational moments that, like, okay, other people are reading these too.
Yeah.
And I think that that's again something that we have struggled with last year was some of the newer to re romance readers talking about, like, acting like romance is brand spanking new since 2020.
Yeah, or that, you know, older romance authors are copying from authors that came after them.
Right.
Well, but also that, like, there's not older romance authors. Like, all the romance authors that, like, are writing are all young.
Right. Well, the new people are feeling that.
The
Like
new
they're
people think that, yes.
So
Yes.
I just remember Carly Phillips, that book hitting TV, you know, national daytime TV, and people talking about it. And it was, again, it was just one of those moments where you're like, okay, this is, you know, people are reading this. I'm not some weirdo that I'm like invested.
Yeah.
Yeah, and well, it gave you permission to do
Yeah.
it.
Okay. So talk about trends, Amanda.
Okay. Trends. Paranormal romance surged in popularity with vampires, werewolves, and other supernatural creatures dominating shelves. Chick lit romance emerged as a lighter, often humor-driven subgenre with relatable heroines navigating life and love. Ebooks began gaining traction, making self-publishing and indie authors more visible.
So that's from 2000 to, well, 2001 till 2010 would be the decade. So before we talk about the books we love, I do think that we have to talk about the wavy line of romance during this time, because we already have kind of touched on it. So the romance genre and its advocates began to push back notably against designation of women's fiction titles as romance starting in the late 90s and early 2000s. But the effort became more visible and organized in the 2010s. This period saw an increased effort for romance writers, publishers, and organizations like the RWA, to clarify what defines a romance novel, a central love story, an emotional, satisfying, optimistic ending, either the HEA or the HFN. The pushback came from concerns about mislabeling and under-evaluation of romance as a genre. Women's fiction often included romantic elements, but typical focus was on personal growth, family dynamics, and other relationships, which would contrast the romance genre's defining characteristics. The moment gained traction alongside broader discussion of genre recognition. So us, you know, talking about genre recognition and going through and now labeling even our subgenres, right? Like, we're talking romance, but then there's romantic suspense. There is sports romance. So this is not new conversation since 2020. And I know that there have been people that have talked about like how troping books is a new thing. It really isn't.
No.
It's just, I think that we're seeing it more prevalent because of social media and how we engage with books, with authors, with publishing now. And the RWA and really pushed back on these large publishing houses that was giving everything a romance label. Because even back in 2000, romance was holding publishing up. We were the money that fed them to do all the other things. And this is where the gray lines start to happen with, like, Janet Ivanovich's Stephanie Plum series. At first, it was labeled as romance. It was catered to romance readers, but it's not.
No.
It's why Nicholas Sparks got the designation of romance because, you know, it's a love story, but he misses the ending. And there was pushback because, one, you know, he wrote a lot of books. So that's a lot of less shelf space that romance authors were getting because they were all being shelved together in the stores. And so the pushback came, you know, either you have a romance section, but you also need to have a women's fiction section and publishing. You have to do better in labeling these things. So. Let's see here. Chick Lit was not true romance. It is not. It's not. It never was. I don't think it ever intended to be. It was. I feel like if we even went back and looked at like Barbara Cartwright and what she wrote and how she wrote it, hers would straddle the line just like Emily Henry's do. Like, are they more character driven? Like, one person has a better story than the other? Or is it truly the couple is the center of the book? So.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I think that can, it gets murky again. Like, I think we still have those murky lines these days.
I mean, we're still seeing it. I think some of what Hallie Hazelwood is putting out, I even think some of what, I think what Emily Henry puts out is much more contemporary women's fiction than romance. Oh yeah, Barbara Cartland. Sorry, Susie, I got that wrong. It's Barbara Cartland. Too many names in my head.
Whenever I think of her, I always like
white.
She always had, well, they had the big picture, like the big author pictures at the back of the book, and she was just like this. She was not a big lady, but she was just this giant picture with her big hair and very like,
her like white hair. Dog and her murder robes, lots of feather boas.
She was just, it was like a glamour shot with her dog. I always like, that is what I always think of, not the books that she wrote, but her author headshot.
Okay, so let's talk about the 2000s and the books that we loved from the aughts.
So Julie Gardwood, she really rolled into her romantic suspense series with her Buchanan Renards.
Yes.
And that was a series. So I actually, the first one was released in 2000 and the last one was released in 2022. That series spanned 22 years.
But they were still hold up.
It held up. They held up, but they were so well written, and she was a delightful human being. I loved her so much when we got to talk to her. But yeah, but that series, it just was.
It's a great series. Yeah.
It does. I don't know, my copies. I've had multiple copies of Mercy fall apart. So
yeah, I love Mercy.
Yeah, it's a really good story.
That's
really just any of them in that series are good. Like, they're all well done.
Murder List is one of my, that's like my second favorite.
Oh, book. Yeah.
Because that's the Hotel Heiress. And anyway. Okay. What other 2000 books? Anybody?
I had, and I don't talk about her very often, but I was a very big Andrea Kane fan. And some of her earlier books, I think her new ones are very, they're more, much more suspense driven. But she put out one in 2003 called The Scent of Danger. And so it's Dylan is an attorney for a company that manufactures perfume. His boss, the owner of the company, is like murdered. And so when he reads his will and everything, it turns out that to get the company, he had to agree to father a child. And so Dylan goes looking for this child, and it ends up being Sabrina, and she comes in to take over the company, and the people that killed her father are after her. And of course they get together and everything. But I read that book so many times. It was just so interesting, like the whole backstory with the, you know, the company. And like, I don't know. I like that book was like, it was like very like pivotal and just kind of like cementing like another layer of my love for romantic suspense. But they do, it is, that one definitely has romance. Like her newer stuff is much more like crime scene suspense focused, but that one is really good.
Yeah. So I have Bet Me by Jennifer Crusoe. We did a sip and discuss. You can go back and find that. I love that book. It was the first book I remember reading, and we talked about it on that episode. She was plus sized, not perfect. And I remember feeling like, oh, wow, okay, not everybody has to be skinny with big boobs. The Kiss Quotient, which by Helen Hong, and she talks, that was like disability rep. That was like the first neurodivergent romance that we had seen, that was labeled such. There might have been ones previous, but it was never like fully labeled as such. So we had that. The Duke and I by Julia Quinn. I mean, I was still in my historical romance in the 2000s, because if we look at my Goodreads, a book's published from 1990, well, really 1970 through 2011, 98% of them are historical.
Yeah,
Yeah,
and
if
I could.
you look at a lot of the books like in the romance genre, and host like historical was a huge chunk of it. Like contemporary was not as popular in the romance genre. In I mean, yes, with HQN and all that stuff, there was it, but the historic was really like led the romance like genre at that point. And I think in the 2000s, we got, you know, in my reading history, we'll definitely show paranormal and urban fantasy
Yeah.
because that's when I got like, you know, Alona Andrews and Janine Frost and Nalini Singh, and all of those were like early 2000s, like late 2000s. So.
Yeah. Stephanie in the chat brought up Tammy Hoag, Hoag. And I looked, she started publishing in 1988. And she did have a lot of series through the 90s and early 2000s. The last book I see, I think, was, she's still got stuff coming out now, but it's a little farther apart.
Yeah, I read a lot of her books. She's very like suspense thriller.
Suspense, thriller, romantic suspense. So I wonder if she kind of dabbles into that, you know,
It's she
wavy
leans a
line.
little more, I would say she leans a little more further on the suspense thriller side than she does on the romance, because you'll get a lot of relationships between like the partners that are cops or investigators or whatever. So I would say she leans a little more that way from what
Suspense.
I remember, but I haven't read her in a while.
I will say Brenda Jackson's Westmoreland series launched in 2002 with Delaney's Desert Chic was the title,
Oh, I
which
read that one.
would not be acceptable as a title now. But that was the first Westmoreland that launched that iconic series. The other thing that I read a lot in the early 2000s was Mag Cabot's Heather Wells series. But again, this is one of those kind of, we talked about Mary Kay Andrews and those that kind of like Janet Ivanovich wrote on
Well, but
that.
she published a lot in the 2000s, because The Princess Diaries and all that stuff came out in the 2000s
Yeah.
too. I mean, it gained more popularity when the movies came out, but like those books were around before the movies came
I
out.
loved the Heather Wells series. You know, it was just such a great, and she was also average size, like, you know, not plus, but not tiny. which I appreciated. Are there any other 2000 books we need to talk about?
I have Body
Also, oh,
Movers
go ahead.
by Stephanie Bond, but this is one of those ones where it
Oh, I
kind of toes
loved
the
that
line also.
series. I don't
Yeah,
know that
but
one.
it's an ongoing like series though. It's in that like Janet Ivanovich like
She gets a job
style.
picking up dead bodies and taking them to the
Yeah.
funeral home.
That
Like
sounds
she literally is
amazing.
moving bodies. It's a lot of fun.
It was
Oh,
a,
wait, I
it
have to write
is.
this
Well, and
down.
part of it is like she was raised privileged, but then her parents like disappear or get arrested or something. I can't remember exactly how like she like ends up having to get like a job, but it's not, it does not go super well. It's a little chaotic and delightful. But yeah, that series started in the early 2000s also, but it's really good.
That was a really good series. I forgot about that series. I loved that series.
Oh,
There's
wow.
one where she's like, is she on a cruise ship on
I
one?
think, yeah, I think there's one
It's
she's on
just
a
to get on
cruise
a
ship.
helicopter.
That's amazing. I'm gonna have to look this up.
They were
I
so
think you would
fun.
really enjoy it
Do you know there
because it
was another
has.
one, Elaine, I can't think of her last name. The book was called Killer Hair.
Oh,
And
I read
Killer
that.
Hair. Yeah, Killer Hair. And she
Yeah, let
what
me look it up.
they had they made it into like a Lifetime movie or something.
Oh,
A
really? I didn't
TV
know that.
movie.
Yeah.
Yes. Ellen Berham.
Yes. Okay, so we're Facebook friends. We've been friends since like Facebook started because I was so obsessed with her books and I like would message her. So the heroine wears all of these like historical vintage garments and she's a reporter. Anyway. It was a
The
fun series, but
crime of
again,
fashion mystery.
yeah, but again, it's one of those where
Close the line.
it toes the line.
I would. Oh, sorry.
No,
Go
go ahead.
ahead. I was just going to say, I would also be remiss if I didn't mention Jane Ann Krentz and her pen names, Amanda Quick and Jane Castle, but I'll talk more about that next week. But Jane Ann Krentz had a lot of really good romantic suspense, and she kind of straddles, she would go like with time travel, like in the past and in the future. And she wrote across like all three of these pen names and interconnected these series. And I read a lot
It's
of her.
chaos.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so now we're on to 2010, the dawning of new adults and indie romance revolution.
Okay, let
Leah,
me
you want to read
scroll
about a
up.
revolution?
I'll read about the revolution. I just have to scroll to the revolution because our doc is quite long this week.
It is.
Okay, the 2010s new adult and indie romance revolution. So popular books in this time were 50 Shades of Grey by E.L. James. It came out in 2011. It brought BDSM romance into mainstream conversations. The Kiss Quotient, which Becky already mentioned, by Helen Hong, 2018, a neurodiverse romance that highlighted inclusivity. The trends that started here were new adult romance exploded, focusing on characters in their early 20s, navigating college careers and first loves. And the indie author boom really started, and it was fueled by platforms like Amazon Kindle Direct Publishing and allowed for greater diversity in themes and storytelling. And it gave authors more control over everything. Dark romance and taboo tropes gained popularity in niche markets, and there are more diverse and inclusive romances, including the LGBTQIA plus and multicultural love stories entering the mainstream.
So the Kiss
And I think that's
Quotient.
kind of like when they started labeling like the character styles a little bit more intensely, because like before that, like we had, I don't feel like the characterizations were as, I mean, they were there, but it wasn't really named. You know what I mean?
We also saw, though, in this time frame, the push to first person POV, too.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that that has a direct result of how we view characters and the character drivenness of a story. Because if we look at something like Bet Me, that's third person head hopping, that story could be very similar to a spoiler alert by Olivia Dade, where it's third person, no head hopping, just dual POV. And then you can go into like a Janna Austen, like Wrong, where it's first person dual POVs. So I think that, in this time frame, we're also seeing for the first time fan fiction start to become mainstream. So, and the
Well, but
internet's
part of that was
aging
like the
too.
boom of the internet. Like you figure like early 2000s, the internet was still not everywhere. Like it was available, but like most households did not have easily accessible internet. And so that was the big thing. Like technology was changing along with like the publishing world.
Well, and we also have to think too, with the dawning of indie publishing, releasing became faster. We went in, t I remember, so I remember when that Carly Phillips series came out. So book one had already been out for like 3 or 4 months, and then it's the Kelly Ripa book. The next book in that series came out as hardback 6 months later.
Well,
It
and that's the
didn't
thing, it
hit
came out as a
mass market
hardback.
until 18 months after that. So, with the dawning of the 2000s, with this push for indie, we also saw that books didn't necessarily, so traditionally published previous, a book would get a hardback. The only thing that went straight to paperback was categories. Everything else got a hardback release, at least for 3 to 4 months minimum.
There was the very, very rare like occurrence where something would not, but it was extremely rare.
But we saw with like 50 Shades of Grey, the dawning of the e-reader, the dawning of the indie market, a lot of things went to paperback first. 50 Shades was in paperback before it was in hardback.
Oh, was it? I didn't
Yeah.
know that was the one of the first ones that did
It was
that.
one of the first. And it was basically, and again, we've talked about this a million times. 50 Shades of Grey hit at the perfect peak moment. People were getting iPads, people were getting Kindles. It just hit at that time where you could read something without worrying what was on the cover, right? But there was this demand. People wanted the physical books, and source books bought it, said, "Hey, we'll publish this for you." But to print hardback takes a little longer of a print process. And the demand was there. They wanted to capitalize on it, so they went to a paperback release first for it. And then it had hardbacks. We also saw in a lot in this time period, were the digital-only collections, such as Love Swept discontinued their paperback collection and went to a digital-only collection. We saw Karina Press from Harlequin say to their authors, "We'll publish a paperback when you hit a certain amount in ebook sales." So, which I don't know if that's good or bad. That's what it was.
I mean, it depends on which side you're on,
It's
to
why
be
we don't have Cold
honest.
Fury paperbacks or Chicago Aces. Okay, so what were some of our favorite books that we read in the 2011 to 2019?
So Lexie Blake and Shayla Black's Masters of Menage started in 2011 and actually ended in 2015.
Okay.
But then her Lexi's Masters of Mercenaries series started in 2011 also. So she really like went into that BDSM like side of things. But she, I will preface this, I have not read 50 Shades, but from everything that I've heard, they're much better written
So,
than,
50
and the way that
Shades,
the BDSM like area is treated better.
it launched a lot of sub-series in that kind of realm. We saw it with, you had the Masters of Mercenary from Lexie Blake, the Stacey Kennedy Clubsin series. We saw, there are so many. Tracy Wolf wrote her Ethan Frost series. Sylvia Day wrote her Crossfire series, which was indie published and then went on to, get her $1 million contract with Amazon for a novella. One novella, $1 million because of how well her Crossfire series. The Fix You series by Laura Lynn Page. Again, all in that 50 Shades realm. Writing, you know, billionaire meets young, inexperienced, chaotic across multiple books. I would also say the 2011 to 2019 was the era of the trilogy. Nobody could write a book in one book. Everything had three books.
There was a lot of trilogies. There's a lot of singles, but there's a lot of trilogies.
There's a lot of trilogies. A lot of them.
Yeah, I think it for me, like I didn't do the 50 Shades, like that wasn't, I never really read those books, but for me it was getting into the spicier PNR because Feral Sins by Suzanne Wright came out in 2013. We did that for a quick shot. I mean, it's pretty spicy. All those books are pretty spicy, paranormal. So that was kind of like when I slid into that. I also did, you know, I did a lot of YA, I think, during that time frame. So I like, which wasn't like super romantic, but I did a lot of like the YA fantasy and stuff like that. Like I had An Ember in the Ashes by Saba Tahir, and then like A Discovery of Witches came out in 2011. So I think that was originally a trilogy. So I guess my stuff kind of went more like still paranormal fantasy in the early parts of this decade.
Well, in this part too, though, like the dystopian, like Hunger Games, like crush of books was happening. Yeah. And so like that was something that people were moving towards.
You too. Had Cinder, you had Divergent, you had Hunger Games, you had the Clockwork.
Oh, the Cassandra Clare books.
Cassandra Clare books. Mm-hmm. You know, Lee Bardugo.
Lee Bardugo. Yeah.
Bardugo, like her series was coming out then. So, like, yes. And I think that romance kind of had a period here where they did one of two things. They either tried to write new adults so that they could capture those readers that were reading Hunger Games but wanted more of an HEA at the end. Yeah. And then you had the others that were like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to write like 50 Shades. I want it sexy, over the top. And there didn't seem to be a lot of middle ground. Now, like Avery Flynn did publish in this time. You know, she had her rom-coms. But if we look to, this is when Entangled started and you had the Amara label, which was category when it started.
Yeah.
It had a lot of Katie Robert category. Let's see. There were tons of them that wrote category. Tessa Bailey started as category there. That under that Entangled label and under the Love Swept, we saw Tony Alio wrote for Love Swept. Kelly Jameson wrote for Love Swept. Sawyer Bennett wrote for Love Swept. So in this time, the ones that were writing the more middle of the road romances that were spicy, but not 50 Shades of Grey, they were category authors because that was stable.
Well, but then like romantic suspense kind of had like another continued to like grow because like Julianne Walker, she started releasing her original Black Knight series, like Susan's original like books came out in 2014, like her Seal of Protection ones. Like, so, I mean, the romantic suspense never really went away, but it definitely like comes in waves. But Ruby Dixon, she released her Ice Planet Barbarians in 2015. So like that, like started a whole other movement.
So for me, the 2010s, Maya Banks, she had actually been publishing since 2002, but it was her The Darkest Hour that came out in 2010. Tracy Wolf and her Ethan Frost series, The Perfect Gentleman by Lexi and Shayla is in this time period. And we talked about Sawyer and Stacey Kennedy and all those, but there definitely was, it feels like the popular books were either this dystopian YA new adult vibe or like super sexy over the top.
Yeah. And I think towards the end, like towards the end of this time frame, which when I was looking, like then the sports romance.
Yeah.
Because I think that shift, like me starting to read like sports romance with like Dirty Secret by Mira Lynn Kelly and Sawyer stuff and all of that, like I think that propelled me as mostly a like a you know kind of like a romantic suspense or fantasy like PNR reader, like that's what propelled me more into the contemporary.
Yeah. Well, and Sex Club, Sawyer wrote her
Yeah. Wicked
Wild
Horse.
Wicked Horse series, and then we had Wicked Horse in Vegas. Lauren Rowe has her club trilogy that came out in this time period. And I think that, and everybody talks about this time period as being the golden age for the indie author. And because people couldn't read fast enough, they were, making hand over fist and selling books like crazy. And I don't think the market is really that different than it was then. I just think there are just that many more authors. I had someone today send me a DM and ask me if I had read this author, and I'm like, nope, I don't even know who that author is.
That's the thing, like the market's so saturated now because of the indie like aspect to it, is like it's very easy to publish a book. It's not easy to be successful in your publishing journey, but it is easy to publish, and that is part of the thing, the
J.C. Burton
indie.
sports romances. Yeah. I mean, a sports romance, and that's the thing. Like, I was looking, Body Check by Elle Kennedy came out in 2013. So, might even been 2008. So, none of this is new. Like, sports romance has been around for a minute. Stacey asked 50 Shades,
2009.
2009. Stacey asked about 50 Shades of Grey. So, yes, 50 Shades of Grey was originally fan fiction. She decided to change it and indie publish it. She independently published it. And within, I think she sold something like 100,000 books on her own before it
Yeah, I
got
think
picked
so.
up by Source, which was a new label. If I remember correctly, Penguin Random House actually bought it for Source. And said, hey, because they were in partnership, and said, hey, here you can dabble with this. And so, really, source books, these Bloom contracts and stuff like this are not new. We have seen this happen before, just not at the rate that it's happening right now.
Oh, but it
But
wasn't as the information was not as easily accessible as it is now
yes.
either.
Okay, does anyone else have any other books from 2010 to 2019 before we go into the last decade?
Anna Hackett's Hell Squad. It's very dystopian. It's like aliens have come and like taken over the world, and it covers like, I mean, they're based in Australia, but like it has like cut like it's the entire world but that's a really good
It
series.
is really
So, real
good.
quick, Karen brings up Susan Elizabeth Phillips. And here is my beef with Susan Elizabeth Phillips. Her books are that borderline of women's fiction. She wrote and said
See,
she was writing sports romance.
I would of course call hers women's fiction. I wouldn't even say she was a
They
borders.
didn't feel like romance because they were single third person POV. And you really just got the female character's journey. And a lot of times, the. In her early books, I'm talking about her early sports romance. They often felt like the hero, the male main character, was just a hand to help guide her through her story and her character arc. So, lots of people bring her up, and I think she's fine, but she definitely was one of those straddling that wavy line of women's fiction versus romance. Okay, so we're to the 20s. We're in the 20s.
2020s.
So we're really just talking about 4 years here.
But
It's
you know, I
five.
struggled because
5 years.
we've read a
Well, but we
lot
haven't
of
completed
books.
this year yet.
We've read a lot of
I'm
books,
just.
though, I mean.
We have. And I do think that in the current, I would say since 2020, I do not reread as much as I used to. Now, I know Amanda is like the queen of rereading.
I haven't reread that much like eyeball. I've been doing a lot of like audio
Listening,
rereads, especially with like graphic audio coming out, and I was doing a lot of that this year. So I haven't reread like as much this past year.
I will say, like, since I started doing audiobooks, I rarely reread. Eyeball reread.
I've all
But I only listen to books I've already read also. Like, I can't listen to a new book.
Okay,
I'm getting better with
Jennifer
that.
is saying you're right that it is 5 years because 2000 or 2020 is 1 year, 2021 is
Oh yeah.
so
Okay.
okay, fine, whatever. But we can't make Le let Leah
Thank
be
you.
right.
Thank you for
Never hear the end of
proving me
this.
right.
We're never gonna hear the end of
Oh.
this. She's in trouble anyway, so this might dig her out a little bit of being in trouble.
I'm
We'll
not in
see on
trouble.
Wednesday.
The rules were never clearly stated
There
in
are
the
rules,
order in which I
Leah.
had to
There
read
were
it.
rules. You just ignore the rules. Anyway, so
Um,
2020, we are talking the age of TikTok and tropes, the 20s. That is what the 20s are going to be noted as. The age of book talk and tropes.
I don't know if I want that to happen.
Ooh.
I like the roaring 20s, like the 1920s. Can we just go back to that?
No, because then we didn't have e-books.
Yeah. And I read much faster.
Mean,
Also,
I do
books were
too,
way
but
more
still.
expensive in the 1920s than they are in the 2020s based on what you're
I
earning.
know,
And
but life was not as.
also that whole, economic depression
Great
thing.
Depression.
Well.
Dust Bowl, people dying, whole
Do we
dusts.
see a similarity here from the 20s to the 20s? I mean, just
Also,
saying.
it's also interesting to note that, and Jen Ellen brings it up, there was a huge influx
Yeah.
of readers in 2020. Good, bad, who knows? We have opinions, but then I start to feel like I'm the old guy on my fence telling the kid to get off my lawn.
I am the old guy on the fence telling the kid to get off my lawn.
Yeah, I mean, we are, but we also acknowledge that it's good for there to be more.
It is good for there to be more readers. And it's really interesting because my girl child will pick up a romance here or there. I wish she read more. I think that she would love them and enjoy them, but it's just not. I mean, I maybe get a book a month out of that kid. So
I mean, you're lucky to get that, so.
I'm excited that there are new readers. And I want readers to be passionate. And I don't want to be accused of gatekeeping or being the old guy on the lawn telling them to get off. I just want the new readers to realize that there is this rich, beautiful history of romance and publishing that they're acting like never existed.
That's the thing. They need to appreciate the fact that Fabio, like, was a staple of the 80s
And the 90s.
because
And the
of,
90s, yeah.
like, all of the covers that he graced. And, like, that's the thing. Like, you need to look at the good things that came from
I'm not
romance,
sure that I would say Fabio is a
not the
good
Fabio. I'm
thing.
not saying the Fabio covers, but you would not have the romantic comedies that we have if it was not for romance. You would not have a lot of the movies that we have if not for romance books.
Well, and I don't think that you would have things like, if you look at a show like The Office or Scrubs, that's that single camera document, that's a single point of view. That's a dual point of view. And I do think that that comes out of some of the movements and changes that we saw in publishing as a whole, that it doesn't have to be a third person, head hopping type situation. That, you can tell a story, you can engage in a narrative from one POV. And Jen Ellen is right. This is where the RWA could do some good things here. Or the Romantic Times. The Romantic Times, I think, stopped publishing in 2015, I think it was. It went bankrupt. And it was, again, one of those, it was a magazine, an industry standard that did those interviews, talked about those things, told you what was coming. And, there are things like I was having a conversation with an author and I said something about, Well, it's the status right now, you would be back catalog. And they were immediately offended. And I was like, you're in the catalog. Do you know how many people never made it to the catalog? But it's a way, it's an old way, and I understand that, and I probably shouldn't have said it like that. But it's an old way to allow people to kind of gauge and understand where your readership is and what you're in the process of doing. If you're at the end of the catalog, you're building a backlist still. You're still trying to find your readers, and as you grow, you will move up in the catalog till you are a front cover,
Yeah, I think there's this pressure to find that viral moment, with the way things have been
Well,
coming
with
out
it,
the past few years.
we see it on threads all the time. Like, I want that viral moment. Did you really see that big with a viral moment? And I have conversations with authors all the time that, like, all of a sudden my book is 17,000 in all of Amazon, and usually they sit under the hundred thousands. And I'm like, that is fantastic. Someone else might see that and be like, you're only in the 17,000s. There are like 70 million books on Amazon, and their ebook is in the top 20,000. Like, yeah, that's something to
Like when,
celebrate.
and if you hit those like top 500s, like that is something to be excited about too. Like you don't, you're making money when those numbers go up.
So, popular books of the age of TikTok and tropes. The Love Hypothesis by Allie Hazelwood. Emily Henry's Book Lovers, Icebreakers by Hannah Grace, Fourth Wing by Rebecca Yarros, Heartstopper by Alice Oseman. I think you can include Talia Hibbert in here, but she actually published those books previous to 2020. They just found their popularity in 2020. Trends, TikTok's Book Talk has driven sales and trends popularizing tropes like enemies to lovers and grumpy sunshine. Romantic fantasy solidified itself as a top genre, blending world building with intense relationships. More authentic and diverse relationship and characters, cultures, and relationships. Audiobooks became a major medium for romance with duet and full cast narration styles enhancing the storyteller. So yeah, we did see a lot of movement in 5 years. Audiobooks went from being, oh, okay, to, I mean, it's a question I see almost daily. Is that available in audio? And you have as many audiobook readers as you do e-read. I mean, probably not. I know it's different, but there
Yeah, but you have
is.
those people who read exclusively in audio, though, too. Like you have people who exclusively read ebooks and exclusive audio listeners also. So it's like you might have the same amount, but like the bucket is different.
Well, and Jen Ellen brings it up, Ice Planet Barbarians. That's a 2015 series. People act like it was just written in 2020 because that's when it got found. So, there's that. Okay, so some of the things that I think it's important to talk about is also like indie publishing changed a lot, and I've been saying it for a couple weeks now. TradPub in 2025 is going to build their brands on the back of indie authors. And I think we're just going to see more and more of that. And I'll just real quick go down these. Indie publishing created greater diversity in stories and voices, flexibility to experiment with tropes and subgenres, faster release schedule, accessible pricing, direct author-reader relationships started happening in indie. And actually, this was just brought up on Threads earlier tonight. People miss the days of when the only thing you knew about the author was their bio on the back of the book and their picture. Because seeing some authors on social media making choices that they're making, you have to then decide, do I support this person? Do I not support this person? Where, we didn't need to know what kind of shit people they were before social media. Pressure indie publishing causes pressure on traditional publishing. It normalized the non-traditional formats. Again, we can just release a paperback. We don't have to have a hardback first.
Well, but there, how many people just released an ebook though, too?
And there was things like the impact of indie authors being empowered. I mean, they drive the market. Colleen Hoover, Mariana Zapata, Amy Dawes, we just saw this. She got a seven-figure deal for a series that Book One's already been published on, and she was able to drive, and get the deal she wanted. Tessa Bailey was able to sell her entire backlist for multiple millions of dollars, that she had published independently that allowed, for this huge movement. So, yeah, I don't think we'd have the romance genre that we have now without indie publishing.
No,
And I don't think
I
we'd
don't
have
think
the
we would.
stories or the diversity of stories that we have right now either. Okay, books that we loved from the 2000s. You can just go back and listen to
Mean the
every episode
2020s?
or the
Yeah,
2020s.
I mean, yeah, just listen to anything we've done in
Raved
the past
about.
couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything that stands out from the last 5 years?
I'm just gonna say one because the rest of my list is literally on any episode you pick up. But and I did talk about this one, but Never Stay Gone by Tal Bauer, because I didn't get a lot of, until there was indie publishing, like where I've lived in this country, there was not a big push for MM books or any kind of sapphic or any of those kind of books. So I think especially with the indie publishing rise, that those were widely more available, and like that book just drop kicked me into outer space. Like I was just like so emotional, so well done, and I have to like pace myself now. Like I have the next one by him ready to go, but I have to be ready for like emotional damage. So
But I feel that way with like Real by Kennedy Ryan.
yeah.
I have that one on
You
my
know,
list too.
you have the Harlem Renaissance, which is such a fascinating period in history, but she brought it forward, modernized it, and made a story that all of us could relate to. And it's just so incredibly well done and such a beautiful story. And then I think of like Angelina M. Lopez and her After Hours series, and I think of Natalie Kenya and the Vega family. I would be lost without them.
Yeah, I saw you had those. That's the only reason I didn't put them on my list.
But I'm just like, those are some amazing books. And After Hours and the Vega family, those were both traditionally published. But again, I think it's that we saw this push in indie, for more diverse voices, and traditional publishing said, okay, we have to do better. And they bought Kennedy Ryan's books.
And that is the thing too. Like you see this diverse push in the indie publishing world, and so trad did do better. Like they did make better choices and more diverse choices, and there's been new imprints started because of those choices that were made. So that's the thing. The indie boom has been really good on all sides.
Yep. So those are our Romancing the Decades. If we didn't mention your favorite author, feel free to comment it. Let us know. I'm not going to say that we're going to use this list to help guide our backlist, but don't be shocked if some of the authors that we've talked about over the course of the last hour or so show up in future Sip and Discuss over the course of the next couple months.
Well, but we
Yeah.
have some really exciting episodes coming up
We do.
too.
Yeah,
So,
we
because
do.
we kind of talking about revamping like our thought process and where we're heading, and we're pretty excited about it.
So we completed 8 weeks of Project Backlist.
Yes.
There is a giveaway coming. I don't have it ready yet. I hope to launch it this week. So make sure you check out our website and follow us on Instagram, and I will have details over there coming for that. All of the authors are offering some form of their book, be it an ebook or a paperback. It just depends because we had some international authors in that project backlist. So watch our socials. We will have an announcement for a giveaway for all of for our project backlist authors. But project backlist doesn't stop. If you are doing our latest challenge, New to You Author Challenge for our first quarter of 2025, if you read a project backlist author of one of the series that we featured through the last 8 weeks, you can count those as entries into New to You Authors, because there will be special incentives across the next couple months for project backlist authors. If you are an author listening to this and you have a backlist and you would like to be featured, send me an email and I will give you details on how we're going to do that going forward. So that leads to our moment. It's that time, Leah.
It's that time.
Amanda, it's that time.
It's that
book.
Time.
Book of the week.
Man, I haven't done the jazz hands in so long.
So long. Well, welcome back, jazz hands.
Welcome back.
It's that time for Book of the Week. Leah, what's your Book of the Week?
My Book of the Week is In Bed with a Highlander by Maya Banks.
Oh, that's a good one.
Doing some reading for a soon-to-come episode, so I am delving down the Highlander world of Maya Banks. And I have to say, I have not finished it yet, but I am, because I had to read other things.
Well, I don't know what you did is counts as reading, but whatever.
I binged all three of those last week. So
it's so good. And it honestly, so like good. The heroine is just, she's such a badass and I love her so much.
I know.
And the fact that she like, it's like, I don't care what you're saying. I'm going to do what I want to do. And fuck
that's
so,
my favorite one. Out
but
of
also
the, three.
The fact that she's like, you're not a good lover.
Yeah.
And he's like, I will
good.
Prove to you that I am.
Yeah.
And she's like, I was wrong. But I'm still going to do this.
If you
I really
like
enjoy their relationship.
If you like that one, then you have to read Judith McNaught's The Joining.
Okay.
Because I think, yeah, it's yes, The Joining, I think.
I just really love the dynamic of these two characters and like the fact that like she is supposed to be this like timid, naive girl who doesn't know anything
that
and
lived
she
in a nunnery.
She lived in a nunnery and was raised by like yeah. Yes, who like who would tell her that when you kiss there's no tongue and
yep.
Like the things that she learned were not it just was ridiculous and delightful yeah. And I just really am enjoying their story and the fact that she is supposed to like she is portrayed as this like naive idiot but she is naive but she's not an idiot.
I'm wrong. It's called Kingdom of Dreams. Joining is Joanna Lindsay.
Kingdom of Dreams.
A Kingdom of Dreams.
Okay.
She's a Scottish Contessa.
All right.
Yes.
I wrote it down, so
just saying.
I'm excited about the rest of the series because
Stacy, don't you worry. But historicals are not going to be underrated in 2025.
Not by
no.
us.
Not by us. Okay. Amanda, what is your book of the week?
My book of the week is The Art of You by Brittany Shaheen. This is book three in her Costa family series. It actually releases this Thursday, January 9th. So the first two books that she did were published with Bontlake. She went back and published this one herself. So this one is very much coded to everything else that she independently publishes. And I loved it. It starts in the middle of an op. There is like massive tension between Isabella and Hudson. Isabella is the Costa in this book. She's the youngest sister.
Okay.
Hudson is her brother's best friend, which you all know I love. But it was... it's quintessential Brittany Shaheen and I loved it. And like, if you like her books, like you're going to want this one on Thursday.
Okay. Mine is The Forever Rule by Carrie Ann Ryan. It comes out tomorrow. It is book one in the Cage Family series. It's a new series. It was loosely connected to her little three trilogy, 1 week boyfriend.
I think the one we did for the Backlist?
Like Good Time.
Not the
It's the one that
whiskey
just
ones.
Oh, the okay.
Yeah, that was like Good Time Boyfriend. There were three books. Book one in that series. These are her half and step siblings, the Cages.
Oh, okay.
They're as big and as complicated as the Mallorys or the Montgomerys. And it's so, yes, so good. Cannot recommend it enough. I read it fast while I rage read other things. Okay. So Patreon update, celebrating 4 years in the hive is Susie,
Susie.
Leah's favorite roommate. 3 years in the hive is Jenna.
Yay. Hey,
Two
Jenna.
years in the hive is Amy, and then 1 year in the hive is Cindy. Thank you to all of
Ooh.
you for your continued support of Buzzing About Romance and sticking around and hanging out with us and
Putting up with our
not wanting to
chaos.
kick us to the curb, I guess.
I mean, apparently they like
They
us.
like us. Some of them for
I
four
mean, Susie
years.
and I have shared a bed, so we know that she likes me, so.
If she ever quits us, Leah's gonna take it personally.
Yep.
I may. I may take it
You
personally.
best not snore the next time you all share a bed, is all I'm gonna say. Swag pack sponsors for January are author Rebecca Gallo. Don't forget, oh well, and also as B Gallo. She has both pen names. Don't forget your January pack will be with December's and it's headed out tomorrow. Tomorrow, swag packs are headed out into the mail and they will have both December and January's stuff in them. Make sure you're back here Wednesday for our discussion of 9 month contract by Amy Dawes and a discussion we will have. For a list of books talked about this weekend, please visit our on-the-shelf show notes at buzzingaboutromance.com. You can find a current list of books for our upcoming Wednesday episodes on our website. Don't forget to follow us on social media for more updates and join our community of romance enthusiasts. If you love this episode, please leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform and share it with your friends. Your support helps us bring more exciting content to you every week. So we're back on Wednesday with
Yes.
Amy Dawes' 9 month contract, and then we're back next Sunday with special guests. We have category romance authors next week. Do you see a theme?
Yay.
Do you see a theme?
If you also are not signed up for the newsletter, we have been very good about sending out a regular newsletter every Friday, and typically gives you the title of Sunday's episode. Sometimes we don't have one, so we kind of have to just bake it. But so you'll know what's coming Sunday, and it has all the things that you will need in there
All the
too. So if you
things.
don't get it yet and you want to get it, sign up and you will get it on Fridays.
You can sign up on our website at
Yes.
buzzingaboutromance.com. So that's a wrap on our trip through the decades of romance. We hope you enjoyed revisiting the iconic books and trends that helped shape the genre into what it is today. Whether you're a fan of sweeping historicals of the 90s, the paranormal frenzy of the 2000s, or the TikTok-driven hits of today, there's something for every romance reader to love. Don't forget to share your favorite romance reads from each decade with us on our social media. We'd love to hear what shaped your love of the genre. As always, thanks for buzzing about romance with us. Until next time, everyone.
Happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.